Play Ball with Babe Ruth. Play Ball with the Navy. The United States Navy brings you the adventures of Babe Ruth. And here to tell you about the immortal Babe is the man who knew him so well, his pal, the popular sports reporter, Steve Martin.
A list of the big fella's records is as long as your arm. But one of the most sensational exploits which changed several lives and determined a pennant doesn't appear in the routine records. But before bringing you today's exciting story, I have a message for you. Now that high schools all over the country are opening up again, I know that a lot of you fellows who graduated last spring and aren't going to be back are feeling a little lost right now. You'll be wanting to meet some new companions, make new friends. Well, you can get it, fellows, in the U.S. Naval Reserve, which is your hometown Navy. You'll find there a swell bunch of fellows, your own age, working and playing together and learning together. Think of the fun to be had and the knowledge to be gained in the Air Reserve, for instance.
Right, Steve. A fellow might learn engine repair if he wants to, or electronics, or photography, or any one of the many other Navy skills.
And what's more, Jack, he can learn them well, for the Navy takes pride in the thoroughness of its training.
As a commander, you ought to know, Steve.
I do know. The United States Naval Reserve is the finest possible place for a young chap to spend his spare time, his evenings and weekends, and his vacations.
Well, sure. In the Naval Reserve, you're part of a team that's actively working and playing together, and getting paid for it in more ways than one. Join your hometown Navy, the United States Naval Reserve. Visit your local Navy recruiting office now. And now, back to Steve Martin and the adventures of Babe Ruth.
Some time ago, I told you how a star Yankee pitcher, whom I called Chick Foster, almost wrecked the careers of Babe Ruth and manager Miller Huggins. Chick was traded off the Yankees that winter, and he popped off that this was one deal the Yankees would regret. In the first game between Chick's team and the Yankees the next season, Chick was pitching. And right off, the Yankee batters began falling to the ground, then scrambling up and yelling at Chick. Babe, who turned his ankle slightly, was watching the game with me from the press box, and he was fuming.
The Chick's throwing in our boy's head, Steve.
Oh, no, Babe. He's just a little wild today.
Wild, my eye. He's dusting him off on purpose. Unless he stops, somebody's going to get hurt.
In the fifth inning, Bob Russell, the Yank outfielder and Babe's particular pal, came up. He crowded the plate the way he always did, and the big fella hollered at him.
Watch yourself, Russ. Don't let him hit you.
Relax, Babe. Not even Chick would deliberately bean a man.
You don't know him like I do, Steve. He hates Russ because he's my buddy.
Russ, look out! Chick, get him. He beat Russ. Come on, Steve. Let me out.
Bob Russell was lying motionless on the ground where he had fallen like a log when Chick's fastball hit him in the head. The players from both clubs rushed out to him, and I followed Babe from the press box. The big fellow was raving like a madman when we got to the clubhouse and discovered that Russell had been taken to the hospital. We rushed to the hospital and found manager...
How is he, Hug? How's Russ?
Still unconscious, Babe. His skull was fractured.
Oh, no.
Russ is a fine athlete, though, and while it's too early to tell for sure, the doctors think he'll pull through. Oh,
fine for that.
He won't play any more ball this season, though. Maybe he won't ever play again.
What?
What's that, Hug?
Yeah, it's a tough break, all right, for Russ and the Yankees.
Hug, Chick beamed him on purpose.
Now, wait a minute, Babe. That's a serious accusation, and we can't prove it.
Well, Chick may be a loss, but I don't think he
did it on purpose, I tell you. He hates you and me, Hug, because we spiked his wagon last year when he had it all framed to steal your job as manager. And he hates Russ because he's my pal and stood by us.
Yeah, but Babe,
I don't mean Chick tried to kill Russ, but he meant to nick him and make him and all the rest of us plate shy. Chick wants to beat us out of the pennant, but this time he went too far, and he's going to hear from me.
Wait,
Babe, come back here.
Babe, come here.
Babe, come
back
here.
Hey, where are you going? Well, come on. Hey,
I want to talk to you, Chick.
Oh, hiya, Babe. Sorry about that accident to Russ.
It wasn't an accident.
But I understand he's out of danger. What did you just say?
I said it wasn't an accident. You threw right at his head.
Why, you're crazy. My fastball was taken off on me today. I couldn't control it.
You're a liar, Chick.
What? Why, you...
And you're a yellow dog. Nobody but a yellow dog would throw a beanball.
You're asking for it, big noise.
You bet I am. Like this!
Here, I show you.
The big fella and Chick tangled like a couple of grizzlies with no holds barred. It was then when Chick's manager and I tried to break him apart that I saw Landis, the white Maine commissioner of baseball himself, stalk in. When the players saw him, they all jumped in and pried Chick and the big fellow apart. When the commissioner faced Babe, you could have heard a pin drop.
You came into the opposition's clubhouse of your own free will, Babe?
Yes, that's right, Mr. Commissioner.
You started this fight?
Well, yes, I guess I did.
You're darn tootin' you did. He accused me of beating Bob Russell on purpose, Mr. Commissioner, and then he slugged me.
I want to see you and your manager about the accident later, Foster.
It wasn't an accident.
That's
Chick
for me to determine, Babe. You took the law into your own hands on property under the jurisdiction of organized baseball. I am suspending you for 1 month without pay and fining you $1,000. I'll see you later.
You must be out of your mind, Babe, going into the clubhouse after Chick.
I saw Red, Hug. But I also wanted Chick to know that I was onto him before he beamed another Yankee player.
Ah, Chick's a rat. He knows we can't prove he threw a duster at Russ. So you played right into his hands.
I know that now. I'm sorry, Hug.
Yeah, fat lot of good that does us. Russ is out of the lineup. You're out for a month. How are we going to win the pennant now?
We're not licked yet.
Oh, we haven't got a prayer. Chick cooked our goose just as he said he would. And you cooked mine. Huh? So long, sucker.
In a month, when Babe finished sweating out his suspension and got back in the lineup, the Yanks started to climb. With the big fella's bat wrecking the opposition and Gehrig, Dickey, and Lazzari swinging right with him, the Yanks burned their way through the league. By Labor Day, they were challenging Chick's team. The two clubs fought it out down the stretch with a dozen rhubarbs and fistfights every time they met. And they came to the wire neck and neck. A single game, a playoff of one that was rained out earlier in the season, would decide the pennant. There wasn't an empty seat in the park by game time, and the roofs of buildings around the park were black with fans. In the Yankee clubhouse, Huggins said only one thing to the players.
All right, I don't have to tell you that Chick Foster's pitching against us today. He's been a fairly good boy since he beamed Russ, and he wants to win this one and show us up. So watch out for your heads.
Can I say a few words, Hug?
Sure. Go ahead, Babe.
Listen, you guys. What Hug didn't tell you is that his job is riding on this game today. Yeah. And there's something else. Chances are Bob Russell will never play another game of ball. Now, he's got a wife and two kids. His share of the World Series pot, if we win today and get into the series, will make a lot of difference. What do you say?
All right, come on out.
Well, now you're talking. Let's go.
Let's go, my dogs.
The Yankees charged out on the field with fire in their eyes, but Chick banked those fires in a hurry. He drove them back from the plate with his high close one, and then he worked the outside corners. If the Yanks moved in again, they got Chick's duster ball at their heads. The only hit off Chick in four innings was a screamer through the box, which the big fella drove at him. If Chick hadn't managed to jump aside, it would have taken a leg off. He swore at Babe, and that started another rhubarb. The umpires had to threaten to clear the field. At the end of the sixth inning, the opposition was ahead 2-0. I said to Bill Feely of the Globe, "That looks bad for our side, Bill."
Yeah, Chick's got the Yankees scared. They keep remembering what happened to poor Bob Russell. Can't blame them.
Nope. Well, it looks like Chick is one out after all.
Yeah.
Not even the big fella can lick him. I was thinking of poor Bob Russell, who wasn't going to get a World Series payoff, and of poor Hug, who was going to be out in the alley. And I hardly noticed when Earl Coombs scratched an infield hit. Sewell went out, and that brought up the big fella. Babe stood at the plate and didn't move his bat off his shoulder through the first five pitches. He deliberately let it go to 3-2. And then, with Chick showing Babe a big sneering grin, the big fella suddenly stepped out of the batter's box and leveled his hand, pointing to the distant center field bleachers. His meaning was clear. But if it wasn't, none of the fans who'd hushed down could miss knowing that the big fellow was calling his shot. Because you could hear him now all over the park.
All right, Chick, you yellow pup. Get the ball anywhere near my bat, and I'll park it nose bleacher.
And then the ball came with everything Chick had behind it, and it rocketed straight for Babe's head. But the big fellow was obviously waiting, the duster, because he stepped back as Chick was letting the ball go. Then he swung.
Hey, Steve, Babe did it! He parked it in the center field bleachers just like he said he would. Steve, that's the greatest thing I ever saw.
Me too, Bill. Me too.
It was the enemy park, but I think every fan in the place got to his feet and gave the Babe a hand as the big fella trotted around the bases, a big smile on his face for Chick. And Chick, his hands on his hips and his mouth open, looked as if the roof had just fallen in on him. Then I made a prediction. Now watch those Yankees go to work on Chick, Bill, and finish the job the big fella started. The big fella had called his shot correctly, and now I hit the jackpot, too. With all fear out of their hearts, the Yanks fell on Chick like they just bought him. And they murdered him. Before the opposition could get another pitcher warmed up and thumb Chick out of there, the Yankees were leading 8-2. And that was the way the game ended. And the big fella and his boys were in the World Series again. Babe, it was wonderful. Marvelous. How'd you ever call that home run?
Steve, there was nothing to it. I said to myself, look, George, you've hit a few hundred home runs. You ought to be able to belt one more for Russ and Hug. So when Chick laid that old apple up there, I just took a poke at it. And well, that's all there's to it.
Yes, but you hit it exactly where you said you would. How the
hell? Oh, yeah. Well, that's my secret, Steve. Someday, when I retire, I'll tell you all about it.
So ends this adventure of Babe Ruth. But there's still adventure for you young men of America in your hometown Navy, the United States Naval Reserve.
You know, Jack, those words, the United States Naval Reserve, should give all you young men something to think about. Even if you live in a landlocked inland town and have never seen the sea, you can experience a thrill of Navy life. You can study one of the many important Navy trades or skills. You'll have fun and make new friends and the satisfaction of playing and working at something important together if you join the U.S. Naval Reserve.
And, Steve, the thrills and adventures of that 2 weeks training period which many Naval Reservists enjoy each year. Yes, in the Naval Reserve there are thrills to be had and skills to be learned or kept up. And if you're a veteran, the Naval Reserve offers you the opportunity to keep your hand in your own trade or skill. For training, education, good companions, fun and relaxation, and many other good reasons, join the United States Naval Reserve. Drop in at your local Navy recruiting office today. The friendly officer in charge will tell you how you can profitably spend your spare time in your hometown peacetime Navy, the United States Naval Reserve. Now, Steve, what does the log say where to hear next week?
Well, Jack, I'm going to tell you how a young girl named Susie changed the whole complexion of the World Series with unusual results.
The Adventures of Babe Ruth is written by Ben Freeman, produced by Woody Close, directed by Ronald Dawson, and presented by the United States Navy.
Let's go! Batter up! We're taking the afternoon off! We're gonna cheer and boo and raise a hullabaloo at the ball game today.
Okay, hello, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, this is The Bit Slap. I am your host, KBC, for another edition, and this one has to do with baseball again. This is our second baseball show. There'll be at least one more, and if you're all not in your best behavior, more than that, so you are warned. We started this one with an episode from a radio show called The Adventures of Babe Ruth. That's right. This one was the story of Chick Foster, dirty deed doer on the pitcher's mound. The Adventures of Babe Ruth was a regular feature on the Blue Network during the baseball season of 1934. From April until July, it was on 3 days a week. And, of course, there were many, many other things pertaining to the Babe. Movies, songs, articles, commercials, all that stuff. Most of them, not very good. Do you remember the Babe Ruth story with William Bendix? I rest my case. And then we heard from the Harry Simeon Songsters, and it's a beautiful day for a ball game. I'm inclined to agree, even though I can't tell by looking out the window. I have no windows. All I have are wires. And I'm in a small room with artificial light. So I'm going to take their word for it. That's from 1960. Harry, of course, best known for The Little Drummer Boy, which he gets a co-writing credit for, and I neglected to write down who he got the credit with. Not important, I suppose, but you all know The Little Drummer Boy. I will not play it for you today, okay? However, we do have a bunch of baseball tunes. Baseball has lent itself to many, many millions of songs over the years. I keep finding more, and I don't even have to look for them. They just keep popping out of the woodwork. So I will invite you to enjoy, put your hat on, crack up a cold one, grab a hot dog. Got some Cracker Jacks over there for sale and souvenir stand. You may want to pick up a yearbook at a program. And we'll be back in a little while to explain some more about these things. And it'll all stuff. Oh, man, I just can't believe it. Anyway, enjoy, okay? Okay.
And witty, who whispered to me, "You are so pretty." Soon he and I were cabareting. We had a good time, goes without saying. He came to my house, all the lights were low, and then he held me close, set my heart aglow. He told me that my lips were as sweet as wine. With that he put his two lips close to mine and talked of baseball, baseball, the Dodgers and baseball, baseball, Stan Musial and baseball, baseball, all through the night, baseball, baseball. I was so mad I got to thinking, surely this lad will start me drinking. For there was me, eager and healthy, in love with a he, handsome and wealthy. I tried to get him in my sweet embrace. All he had on his mind was the pen and trace. And though I saw him practically every night, we never went to movies or saw a fight. We just saw baseball, baseball, DiMaggio and baseball, baseball, Chicago Cubs, baseball, baseball, DeRocher and baseball, baseball. My heart knew such humiliation that I sat and planned retaliation, using the wiles known to all women. I'd marry that man if it was human. The wedding bells rang, we were one in June. Triumphantly we went on our honeymoon. He held me very tight under stars so bright and whispered, darling, who do you love tonight? I told him, baseball, baseball, the Tigers and baseball, baseball, Ted Williams and baseball, baseball. I love the game, baseball, Yankees, Red Legs, Braves, White Sox, Indians, Phillies, Senators, Red Sox, Orioles, Athletics, Pirates, baseball, baseball, baseball.
Can you catch? Will you hold the ball when you step to the plate? Will you swing and fall? If you play, you gotta know how it's done. Can you catch? Can you hold a hard one? I mean, baby, do you know the game? I mean, baby, do you know the game? I'm a big league pitcher. Can you catch the hurdle? You hit ball, I throw to you. Southpaw,
outlook wasn't brilliant for the Mudville Nine that day. The score stood 4-2 with but one inning more to play. And so when Cooney died at first and Burrows did the same, a sickly silence fell upon the patrons of the game. A straggling few got up to go in deep despair. The rest clung to that hope which springs eternal in the human breast. They thought if only Casey could but get a whack at that, we'd put up even money now with Casey at the bat. But Flynn preceded Casey, as did also Jimmy Blake. And the former was a no-good and the latter was a fake. So upon that stricken multitude, grim melancholy sat. For there seemed but little chance of Casey's getting to the bat. But Flynn let drive a single to the wonderment of all. And Blake, the much despised, tore the cover off the ball. And when the dust had arisen and the men saw what had occurred, there was Blake a safe at second and Flynn a hugging third. Then from 5,000 throats went up a lusty yell. It rumbled in the valley, it rattled in the dell. It knocked upon the mountain top and recoiled upon the flat. For Casey, mighty Casey, was advancing to the bat. There was pride in Casey's bearing as he stepped into his place. There was ease in Casey's manner and a smile on Casey's face. And when responding to the cheers, he lightly doffed his hat. And no stranger in the crowd could doubt. 'Twas a Casey at the bat. 10,000 eyes were on him as he rubbed his hands with dirt. 10,000 hands applauded as he wiped them on his shirt. And when the writhing pitcher ground the ball into his hip, defiance gleamed in Casey's eye. A sneer curled Casey's lip. And now the leather-covered sphere came hurtling through the air, and Casey stood a-watching it in laughter. A grandeur there, close by the sturdy batsman, the ball unheeded sped. That ain't my style, said Casey. Strike one, the umpire said. Then from the benches, black with people, went up a muffled roar, like the beaten storm waves on a stern and distant shore. Kill him! Kill the umpire! Cried someone on the stand, and it's likely they'd have killed him had not Casey raised his hand. With a smile of Christian charity, great Casey's visage shone. He stilled the rising tumult. He bade the game go on. He signaled to the pitcher. Once more the spheroid flew, but Casey still ignored it, and the umpire said, "Strike!" Hurrah! Cried the maddened thousands, and echo answered fraud. But one scornful look from Casey, and the multitude was awed. They saw his face grow stern and cold. They saw his muscles strain. And they knew that Casey wouldn't let that ball go by again. The smile is gone from Casey's face. His teeth are clenched in hate. He pounds with cruel violence his bat upon the plate. And now the pitcher holds the ball, and now he lets it go. And now the air is shattered by the force of Casey's blow. Oh, somewhere in this favored land, the sun is shining bright. Somewhere bands are playing. Somewhere hearts are light. Somewhere men are laughing. And somewhere children shout. But there is no joy in Mudville. Mighty Casey has struck out.
It sounds like a nursery rhyme, but we keep it on the time. summers when I was a kid. We'd run to the schoolyard and here's what we did. We'd pick out the captains and we'd choose up the teams. It was always a measure of my self-esteem, 'cause the fastest, the strongest played shortstop and first. The last ones they picked were the worst. Well, I never needed to ask, it was sealed. I just took up my place in right field, playing right field. It's easy, you know. You can be awkward, you can be slow. That's why I'm here in right field, just watching the dandelions grow. Catch on the run and not lose the ball in the sun. And then I'd awake from this long reverie and pray that the ball never came out to me. Here in right field, it's easy, you know. You can be awkward, you can be slow. That's why I'm here in right field, just watching the dandelions grow. Dragging on, there's strikes on the batter, some runners are on. I don't know the inning, I've forgotten the score. The whole team is yelling and I don't know what for. And then suddenly everyone's looking at me. My mind has been wandering, what could it be? They point to the sky and I look up above and
there, everybody. This is Mel Allen. It's a bright, sunny afternoon, and what a beautiful day for a ball game. That stood until 1974 when Hammerin' Hank Aaron became baseball's home run king.
Said I was sitting in the classroom starting to dream. Go fast pitching, I could hear the fans scream.
Here's the windup, the pitch, the count 3-2. He swung that stick and that ball flew. Man alive, what a drive. A grand slam homer, that ain't no jive.
The teacher woke me up as I was heading for the plate. I had another class and it was getting kind of late.
Baseball is a dream for me, yeah. And the major leagues is the place to be.
You're right.
Baseball is
is the dream for me.
Me too.
And the major leagues is the place to be.
Right on. 95 degrees at game time. That's a hot one. Reminds me of one of those old Brooklyn stickball days.
You got to say, hey, kid, yes, Aaron and the Mick. All street heroes, boys, take your pick. Let the ball bounce once, then take your swings. Touch those sewers as the neighborhood sings.
And while playing ball on the city streets, many youngsters have wide-eyed major league visions.
About 5'11", I go to work every morning at 7. At the office is tense, but I let off steam playing on the company's softball team. I got a new coat hanger for my black and white. I turned on the ball game on the August night. Drank a few beers, slipped into a dream. Dwight Gooden was pitching, I can hear the fans scream.
Here's the windup, the pitch, the count, 3-2. He swung that stick and that ball flew. Man alive, what a drive. A grand slam homer, that ain't no jive.
I was around the third, the coach slapped a high five. I got mobbed at the plate, the crowd came alive. Now it ain't no dream, for heaven's sake. I'm not asleep, I'm wide awake. Wait, baseball is the dream for me. Yeah. And the major leagues is the place to be.
The pitch, the count, 3-2. He swung that stick and that ball flew. Man alive, what a drive. A grand slam homer, that ain't no jive. The windup, the pitch, the count, 3-2. He swung that stick and that ball flew. Man alive, what a drive. A grand slam homer, that ain't no jive. The windup, the pitch, the count, 3-2. He swung that stick and that ball flew. Man alive.
Thank you.
St. Louis Browns left town. Who were the St. Louis Browns? Tell us what you found. The St. Louis Browns were a baseball team, and they lost more than the Mets could ever dream. They had a one-armed man in left field named Pete Gray, 44. There's no healthy man around to play baseball, and they's always fighting in a war. Bill Vett came along as general manager along about 47. He hired a man to play for them. He stood about 4'11". I got the St. Louis Browns. I got the St. Louis Browns. Since the St. Louis Browns left town. Since the St. Louis Browns left town. Who were the St. Louis Browns? Tell us what you found. The St. Louis Browns were a baseball team, and they lost more than the Mets could ever dream. Ah, St. Louis had a hitter, Roy Seavers was his name. And in that team's dismal history, he hit many homers in many games. They had a no-hit pitcher, they pitched a real humdinger. But Bob Turley got too surly, and they traded him too early. I got the St. Louis Browns. I got the St. Louis Browns. Since the St. Louis Browns left town. Since the St. Louis Browns left town. Who were the St. Louis Browns? Tell us what you found. Ah, they never had a Virgil fire trucks, but they always had the damnedest luck. Now many a Missouri boy, how he loved those dangerous cars, but he never loved the lonely Browns, although they tried so hard. Meanwhile, folks in Baltimore, they wanted a baseball team, so they called St. Louis up and said, "You think the Browns can leave town and become part of our Baltimore dream?" Well, you know what happened. The Baltimore Orioles became a real winning club, and in the hearts of all teenage boys everywhere, who are now in their 30s and 40s, well, sometimes they look at their falling out hair, and they remember when they had the St. Louis Browns. Had the St. Louis Browns. Since the St. Louis Browns left town. Since the St. Louis Browns left town.
St. Louis. Okay, we're back. Me and Jersey here. Jersey, you want to read this? No? All right. All right, we're in the middle of a baseball game today. What's this? It's my playlist. What does it look like? We started with Baseball, Baseball from Jane Morgan. Jane was born as Florence Catherine Currier, related to the Currier of Currier and Ives. So she never had to work a day in her life, but she did. She worked a lot with people like Roger Williams. You think that's easy? Born on Christmas Day in 1920, married to Hollywood movie producer extraordinaire Jerry Weintraub, and lives quite happily, thank you, in Palm Springs, California. And then we heard from Mabel Scott, the baseball boogie. Mabel, originally from Richmond, Virginia, started out in gospel, but is mostly known for her boogie stuff, the elevator boogie and one of my favorites, the Boogie Woogie Santa Claus, and worked a lot with people like Winoni Harris. She got disillusioned with the rock and roll biz and went on back to gospel before dying in 2000. After that, The Ball Game from Sister Winona Carr. She did her best stuff on the Specialty label. Started out in gospel, but got disillusioned with that end of it and turned to rock and roll for her sanity. Unfortunately, it didn't last well. She died mentally impaired in 1976. Following that, Dewolf Hopper, Casey at the Bat, subtitled A Battle of the Republic, sung in the year 1888. Hopper estimates that he had done that some 10,000 times in his career. He had a long vaudeville career. Casey at the Bat, written, of course, by Ernest Thayer of the San Francisco Examiner. Then we heard from Victor Lavera, a good friend of Stevie Moore's. That was the Nashville Bats. Victor met R. Stevie when he moved into next door to him and annoyed him by playing Fire Sign Theater too loud. My kind of guy. I would like to have known him, but unfortunately he died in May of 1998. But I can tell you this, any friend of R. Stevie Moore's is a friend of mine. And then what happened? Oh yes, Right Field from Peter, Paul, and Mary. I'll bet that rang a bell with a lot of you nerd types out there, right? Peter, Paul, and Mary are still at it. Still at it today. Peter Yarrow, Paul Stuckey, and Mary Travers. But you already knew that, didn't you? And then we heard from The Naturals featuring Mel Allen. Some kind of audio bad dream. I really don't know if that was something that Mel got dragged into forcibly or whether he submitted to it voluntarily. I don't know. I'll ask him next time I see him. After that, the Fool Brothers, the Birds, are on tonight. And for all I know, that may be the band that now is called the Fools. But you can try it. You can look up Fools on Google and see how far you get. And you'll find out why I can't tell you anything. Then we heard from Skip Batten and the St. Louis Browns. Skip had himself quite a long career. Unfortunately, he died at the age of 64 in the year 2003 of Alzheimer's disease. Too young for that. He started out with a band called Pledges, which gave us a song called Bermuda Shorts. I'll bet you don't remember that one. Then he went on to become half of Skip and Flip. Do you remember Cherry Pie? That one you might. And let's see, he played bass for the Birds for a while. Then he went on to the New Riders of the Purple Sage and the Flying Burrito Brothers and had various other projects going at the same time. Busy guy, busy guy. So, all right, that brings us up to wherever it is we are now. We're going to go back down to the field in a moment. But first, I want you to crack a cold one and grab a hot dog.
By the shores of old Lake Michigan, where the hawk wind blows so cold, an old Cub fan lay dying in his midnight hour, the toll. Round his bed his friends had all gathered. They knew his time was short. And on his head they put this bright blue cap from his all-time favorite sport. Told him it's late, it's getting dark in here, and I know it's time to go. But before I leave the lineup, boys, there's just one thing that I'd like to know. Do they still play the blues in Chicago when baseball season rolls around? When the snow melts away, do the Cubbies still play in their ivy-covered burial ground? When I was a boy, they were my pride and joy, but now they only bring fatigue to the home of the brave, the land of the free, and the doormat of the National League. He told his friends, you know the law of averages says anything will happen that can. That's what it says. But the last time the Cubs won a National League pennant was the year we dropped the bomb on Japan. The Cubs made me a criminal, sent me down a wayward path. They stole my youth from me, that's the truth. I'd forsake my teachers to go sit in the bleachers in flagrant truancy. And then one thing led to another, and soon I discovered alcohol, gambling, dope, football, hockey, lacrosse, tennis. But what do you expect when you raise up a young boy's hopes and then just crush them like so many paper beer cups? Year after year after year, after year after year after year after year after year, till those hopes are just so much popcorn for the pigeons beneath the L tracks to eat. He said, you know, I'll never see Wrigley Field anymore before my eternal rest. So if you have your pencils and your scorecards ready, I'll read you my last request. He said, give me a doubleheader funeral in Wrigley Field on some sunny weekend day, no lights. Have the organ play the national anthem, and then a little na-na-na-na, hey, 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 goodbye. Make 6 bullpen pitchers carry my coffin, and 6 groundskeepers clear my path. Have the umpires bark me out at every base in all their holy wrath. It's a beautiful day for a funeral. Hey, Ernie, let's play too. Somebody go get Jack Brickhouse to come back and conduct just one more interview. Have the Cubbies run right out into the middle of the field. Have Keith Moreland drop a routine fly. Give everybody 2 bags of peanuts and a frosty malt, and I'll be ready to die. Build a big fire on home plate out of your Louisville Slugger baseball bats and toss my coffin in. Let my ashes blow in a beautiful snow from the prevailing 30-mile-an-hour southwest wind. And when my last remains go flying over the left field wall, we'll bid the bleacher bums adieu. And I will come to my final resting place out on Waveland Avenue. The Dying Man's friends told him to cut it out. They said, stop it, that's an awful shame. He whispered, don't cry, we'll meet by and by near the Heavenly Hall of Fame. He said, I've got season's tickets to watch the Angels now, so that's just what I'm gonna do. He said, but you, the living, you're stuck here with the Cubs, so it's me that feels sorry for you. Loser's tune. That's the one I like the best. Closed his eyes and slipped away. Well, Scotty, it was the Dying Cub fans' last request, so here it is. Do they still play the blues in Chicago when baseball season rolls around? When the snow melts away, do the Cubbies still play in their ivy covered burial ground? Home of the brave, the land of the free, and the doormat of the National League.
Down through the years, the young men came west to play the game. Dodger Blue. Through laughter and tears, the young men came west and rose to fame in Dodger Blue. And they stayed and they played and they made a dream come true. So here's to the dream and here's to the team in Los Angeles. Dodger Blue. Wally Moon, Wes Parker, Manny Mota, Norm Larker, McMullen, McDevitt, McDermott, McBean, Doyle Alexander, and Claude Osteen, Art Fowler, Dick Egan, Tommy Haller, Phil Regan, Simoli, Farillo, Hodges and Duke, Erskine and Koufax, Drysdale and Nuke, from Smoky Walt Alston to Sweet Sweet Lou, they all wore Dodger blue. Los Angeles, Dodger blue. Some came up for just a cup of coffee, while others stayed for many a season through. But they all had a dream, and they all made the team, and they all wore Dodger blue. Maury Wills, Jim Ferry, Norm and Larry Sherry, Lefevre, Lasorda, Valentine, Reese and Reeser, Clem Labine, Roger Craig, Tom Hutton, Steve Yeager, Don Sutton, Will Hyde and Williams, Zimmer and Zahn, Garvey and Gilliam, Joshua and John, and Juan Marichal was a Dodger too. Even he wore Dodger blue. Los Angeles, Dodger blue. And they stayed and they played and they made a dream come true. So here's to the dream and here's to the team in Los Angeles, Dodger blue.
Say, did you hear the news about what's happening in Brooklyn? We really got the blues about what's happening in Brooklyn. It ain't official yet. We hope official it don't get. But beware, my friend, and let me warn you. They're thinking of taking the bums to California.
Let's keep the Dodgers in Brooklyn. A house is not a home without some love. Don't let them leave our premises. L.A. will be their nemesis. Cause Brooklyn fits the Dodgers like a glove.
Mr. Walter O'Malley, we always called you Pally. We stuck with you through thick and thin. But if you take away the Dodgers, guys like Campy, Nuke, and Hodges, we ain't your pal no more the way we've been.
Let's keep the Dodgers in Brooklyn. A house is not a home without some love. Don't let them leave our premises. L.A. would be their nemesis. Cause Brooklyn fits the Dodgers like a glove.
We offer our bridges. You can thank them witches. We have a couple we could spare. But we all feel so glum without the Duke and Gilliam. We need one left to jump off in despair. Really, what would Brooklyn be without the Dodgers? Well, Brooklyn would be like a pair of socks that's holy without Jackson and Simoli. Like a bed without a pillar, without Erskine and Farilla. Like a ship without a harbor, without Padres and the Barber. Like the sun without its shine, without Zimmer and Levine. Like the birds without a bee, without Alston and Pee Wee. And here I am, a poet, and I didn't even know it. So send the Phils to Trenton, the Giants to St. Paul. But keep the bums in Brooklyn, the greatest ball of all. So
let's keep the Dodgers in Brooklyn.
You heard our plea, at last we had our say.
Your mind is in a fog if you take them to that smock. Leave the Dodgers in Brooklyn, USA.
We really love them, keep the Dodgers in Brooklyn. O'Malley, do me one favor, mind your own business and stay home. Don't leave town.
Thank you.
Hank Greenberg was a Jewish baseball player in a time in which there were few opposing players in the opposing dugout, calling every name you could think of for a Jew. They threw beanballs aimed at his head, but he became one of the greatest sluggers ever. He didn't play on Yom Kippur, and he was voted the most valuable player. Hank Greenberg's last season was Jackie Robinson's first. Hank had gotten called hateful names, but Jackie got treated much worse. They threw at his head and spiked his leg, but he was one of the most explosive base runners ever. Fans mailed him death threat letters, and he was voted the most valuable player. One day Jackie was up to bat, and Hank was playing first base. After colliding in a very close play, they both got up to wave. Then Hank turned to Jackie, "I'm sorry, I should have asked if you were okay. Don't let them get to you, you're doing great." And they waited for the pitch to the plate. After a season of thinking, every time that came his way, Jackie Robinson thanked Hank Greenberg for welcoming him into the league that day. Somewhere there's a diamond and a backstop in the woods. There's some kids wearing windbreakers, and some are wearing sweatshirts with hoods. There's a Korean kid in right field, and Norwegian on the third baseline. A Venezuelan kid who's catching is showing the Jamaican kid who's pitching the signs. There's a white girl in center field and a black girl playing short. The second baseman is from China. He's dragging his tennis shoe through the dirt. And over by the backstop, to help the world's hurt feelings get healed, Hank Greenberg and Jackie Robinson are hitting grounders to the kids in the field.
Now a famous baseball player and a famous movie star were married, took a cottage, signed a lease. I always thought it funny Mr. Baseball and his honey were married by the justice of the peace. This will have to be a fast song. The marriage didn't last long, for he wore his baseball uniform to bed. But the genuine cause of divorce was that actress's singing, of course. And in her lyrics, this is what she said. Take me after the ball game, I'll be waiting for you. I want you to want me, but I get the blues. If only you'd take off those damn baseball shoes. I want you so much to be in baseball's great hall of fame. And it's one, two, three strokes, you're out at the old ball game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people think Stairway to Heaven is a baseball song, but you know, it really isn't. I mean, I know you get confused because of the line, it's only a spring training for the May Queen. But you got to remember, Jimmy Page and Robert Plant are from England. They know nothing about baseball. If anything, it would have been a cricket song. Think of that. That's why we're here. We squash these stupid rumors for you. And we also play silly songs, such as the Dying Cub fans' last request. That was Steve Goodman. Steve, of course, is known for two things. Number one, he wrote The City of New Orleans. You remember that one. It was a big hit for Arlo Guthrie. He's also known for being a rabid Cubs fan. He died in 1984 at the age of 36. A couple of days before, I believe it was before the Cubs clinched the pennant. And a month later, he would have died anyway. The Cubs would have killed him by blowing their playoff series against the San Diego Padres and spoiling their only chance to get into the World Series in any of our lifetimes, unless it's this year. Don't get me started. I'm a Mets fan. I know what pain is like. After that, we heard from Dave Frischberg, Dodger Blue. A couple weeks ago, we played Van Lingle Mungo for you. It's the same sort of thing here, only this time he specialized just in guys who played for the Dodgers, including Juan Marichal. I'd have never known. Dave was born in St. Paul, Minnesota, and moved to New York and L.A., and has had quite a career. We'll be playing more stuff from him in the future. After that, let's keep the Dodgers in Brooklyn from Phil Foster. In 1957, there was quite a hysteria trying to keep the Dodgers and the Giants from moving to their destiny in L.A. and San Francisco. Phil Foster was born in 1913 as Fievel Feldman, took the name Foster from Foster Avenue, which is his old stomping grounds. And he's probably best known as Laverne DeFazio's dad in Laverne and Shirley. Spent his life being typecast as some typical Brooklyn guy, for obvious reasons. After that, the Tinklers gave us Hank Greenberg and Jackie Robinson. Tinklers are from Baltimore, Charles Brohan and Chris Mason. And they play cigar boxes, toy pianos, spoons. They sort of sing. In 2007, the director Brian Averill followed them all around and interviewed them and their friends and created a documentary called Everybody Loves the Tinklers. And that was released in November of 2007 at the Land of Fun space in Baltimore, Maryland. Please go see it and tell me what it's like. I've never seen it. After that, The Old Ball Game from Bob Peck. Bob is, this is not the Bob Peck who was the actor who died in 1999 and appeared in Jurassic Park. Nor is he the Bob Peck who's a Cape Cod type Jimmy Buffett. But this is some sarcastic guy with glasses who plays the piano. And I know because I have two of his albums, although I'll be damned if I can find them. I can't really tell you much about him. The albums are here somewhere, but I think they're being eaten by the wires. Either that or it's the cats, although I think if the cats were eating it, they'd be leaving little vinyl hairballs all over the house. So, listen, if I disappear someday, it's the wires, all right? They got me finally. So, all right, so I'm going to disappear now until next time. Got one more for you, another mystery tune. This one's a real mystery to me. And I'll remind you, if you want to get a hold of me, it's kbcradio@hotmail.com. And yes, the Mets still suck. I'll see you next week. Goodbye.
When I heard the shout, Wing Ling Chong Ling, King Kong Egg for Young Chop Suey, Brother Louie, too long, too short, Wing Chong Ling Long, Ling Long, Ling Long, Sing and Re Strike Suey Wong out. Well, Chinese ball game, Chinese got funny names, like Long Ching, Chong Ling, Ching Chao, somehow, too long, too short, Egg for Young, Suzy Wong, Wu Wing, Singaling, Wong Ying, Ying Xiong, Wong Xiong, yes! When I heard that shout, Ling Ling Long Long Ling Wada, when I heard that shout, Ling Ling Long Long Ling Wada.
Bugsy was catching egg for young hit the ball. Singletary gravitated the ball. King Chow on second base, Ring Ling on third. Singletary hit the ball, Susie won rabbit. What I heard, murder, I heard the shot. Ring Chong, Ring Long, Ring was out. Yes, I heard that shot. Chong, Ring Long, Ring Long, Ring Long was out. Well, I heard a shout, Ring Chong Ling Long Ling was out. Then I heard a shout, Ring Ling Chong Ling, King Kong Egg for young chap, so his brother Louis too long, too short. Ring Chong Ling Long Ling, Pee Wee, Ching Ming Ray Sprite, Susie Wong.
What sparks a champion? Sparks you and champions. Choose Wheaties.
Let's see that spark in action. Keep your eye on fleet-footed Richie Ashman patrolling center field for the Phillies. Here's the pitch. Uh-oh, it's a low-sinking liner out over second. Looks like it's in there. Ashman's racing in. He makes a desperate dive. And he's up with that ball. A terrific shoestring catch by Richie Ashburn. Man, oh man, he's really got that spark. Champion Ashburn fires up with Wheaties. How about you? Remember, what sparks a champion sparks you.
What sparks a champion sparks you and champions. Choose Wheaties.
Breakfast of champions.
At a hot dog at the game, beat roast beef at the Ritz. Well, that's baseball, and it's my game. You know, you take your worries to the park and you leave them there. You yell like crazy for your guys. Good for your lungs. Gives you a lift and nobody calls the cops. Pretty girls, lots of them. But none any prettier than Baby. Are you listening, Baby?